The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Star Wars Explained. Today, we're bringing back two guests to talk about the new book, Escape from Valo, which is out right now. Please welcome back the authors of the story, Daniel Jose Older and Alyssa Wong. Welcome back.
Hi.
Hey, we're back.
So we're talking full spoilers for the book today. So if you haven't read it yet, turn back now. And I'm going to dive right in. I just want to say that I loved Ram as basically Batman at the start of this book. I already love Ram. He is a standout character to me. But the gravelly voice, the Scarlet Skull, was so delightful to start off with.
The other connection he has to Batman, now that you mentioned it, is that he is the dad that doesn't want to be a dad. You know?
Oh yeah, he's got three Robins.
He's got a whole bunch of Robins, exactly, just hatching out of eggs everywhere he turns, and he's like, "No, it's a war. Get back in your eggs, kiddies." much like Batman, you know, and that's so true. But I think that's the ultimate challenge of kind of Jedi-ness is like, you know, there's so much you want to do in the world, but you also have to take care of other people while you're doing it, no matter how rogue you want to be. Or maybe that's the path you walk away from it, you know, like some other characters. But Ram is like, okay, we're doing this, so let's do this. But it's very stressful for him.
Yeah.
He's always so much fun to read. I relate to him so much. I thought he and Wreath in Midnight Horizon were perfect, because I also really relate to Wreath. Like, they just kind of want to be alone with their books or with their machine parts, but totally. They formed such a bond, became Scarlet Skulls, so to speak, and then him taking on that persona was so much fun. I mentioned in our last talk that you both have this very kind of chaotic style when you write. I'm curious if either of you have a past or a history playing Dungeons and Dragons or other tabletop games?
No, my wife does. I know. Alyssa, do you?
I do, but like, I think not D&D, but more like Powered by the Apocalypse kind of games, like Monster Hearts is really fun. I feel like you have to have a really solid group for Monster Hearts, which is basically like, what if a monster supernatural YA romance novel, and you're playing a bunch of teenagers who are all monsters, you're trying to figure out what you're doing. So that's really fun. But no,
I ask because I'm fairly new to it. I've been playing for like 3 years, but my game master, he just tends to create storylines very similar to yours. So much to the point that V18, every time he pops up, I'm like, that's that thing. Like, we basically have a sentient stove, for lack of a better word, that keeps getting upgraded with like jetpacks and weapons and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's V18.
That's so funny.
And reading through Escape from Valo, also, I was like, this just feels like D&D in the sense that you're bouncing ideas off of one another, obviously, and just kind of following the rules of improv. It feels very yes and, where you're just escalating things to this very wacky, fun point.
That's very astute, because Alyssa does have a background in game writing.
Oh, that's right. I do. I forgot.
So between the two of us, I think those probably are secret influences, because I did comedy improv for all 4 years of college. And it's clearly influenced a lot of my writing, because that's a lot of the vibe of, you know, what it is. Yes. And I think we did that for each other. Like I said in the last interview, we were able to know each other, which I think is a really important part of the process. But we were also so excited about what each other was doing that it was usually like, yes. And then it built.
Absolutely. Daniel would send something and be like, here's what I'm thinking. And I'd be like, yes.
And literally, and like, because it would build. It would always build. It was never just like, this is cool. It was like, this is cool, but also, or and also like, it'll turn into this. And then, was the ship yours? I can't remember. I was thinking today about how much I love this whole notion that Gabby has this secret ship. And I can't remember for the life of me whether that was you or me that came up with that originally. But whoever it was, we both ended up kind of building on that and building on it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it might have been me, but I think it was you.
It's got to have been you. It's got to have been you.
If it was me, then it was you who added the detail of Gabby then being like constantly like, who am I going to bring with me in this ship that doesn't fit enough people? Which is such a heartbreaking and true emotional moment for Gabby. I love it.
Yeah, you talked about Gabby in the non-spoiler part, but you put that kid through the ringer. And I go into these middle grade books thinking, these are going to be lighthearted and fun, and they are, but also at some points you're reading about how he locked eyes with his teacher as he got petrified. It's like, what? Oh my God, why?
that might have been my fault.
That was definitely a listen. But we agreed to it, so we all take equal amounts of credit and blame. That has to be fair. But yes, I mean, I think one thing I remember very clearly going into this process, and it is a conversation that we really an ongoing conversation that we had, but certainly before we even started writing, we talked a lot about the idea of not wanting to traumatize the reader, but also to be really honest about the trauma that the characters are living through as children in a war zone, in occupation. You know, it's like you can't sugarcoat that and pretend everything is cool. And it's the High Republic. Nothing is cool, right? But you can't just pound it.
Everything's cool.
Everything is awesome. You can't pound the reader with it constantly and just make them miserable, right? So it's always this really tricky and complex kind of line that you're navigating. And there's no right answer. It's just vibes. Like every writer has their own version of where that line is. Every project has its own version of where that line goes. But what was actually really nice was having another writer to be like, where is that line? Did we cross it here? And it'll happen in one sentence. You know, like you'll be towing that line and then suddenly you'll just slide over it. And it's hard because you need to, again, you need to hit that edge. You can't just constantly be cute and fuzzy, but you can't like hurt people. You know, and that's so all that to say is we were really cognizant of that from the very beginning and constantly throughout the process.
Yeah. And I think like, you know, we never write to hurt people. You know, I feel like it's not, at least for me and for you, it's mm-hmm. not like ever like an act of sadism. It's always like, again, how do you be true to what is happening in this character's like emotional state? Like, how does that impact their body? How does that impact the actions they take with the people around them and who they choose to be? And I think you see that in a lot of different ways in Escape from Valo. Like, you see it in, like, the three younglings. You see it in, Drigget, who's, like, just a normal non-Jedi kid who gets left behind in an occupied city. And you see it with, like, you see it with Zile, who has like a really tight, like supportive family, and how that helps give them like strength in this really, really rough, scary world.
And if I can just add on to that, Sue, I love exactly what you just said. It's so true. And a lot of the conversation around kind of like dealing with heavier topics in children's books starts from the assumption that kids don't have trauma. And that's not true. That's not a reality. And I think we have to be very aware of that, both so that we don't, you know, further traumatize them, but also, you know, just as importantly, but often less mentioned, so that they have some representation of that on the page that can help them navigate it and be in conversation with it and have a language for it. Because so many people insist on writing, you know, with this idea of a non-traumatized child in their head. And so what about all the, you know, the rest of us? Like, I think it's really important to be able to be in conversation with kids about things they've gone through. The only way sometimes to do that is through story.
Mm-hmm. And it can really help to have something where, like, especially if you're a child and you do have trauma and no one takes it seriously because they're like, oh, you're a kid, you can't, that's not possible. Mm-hmm. To have an example you can point to and be like, that's me, that happened to me.
Right.
And it's real. Because somebody else recognized it I think that's really important.
On the lighter side of relatability, I think Gavi and Kildo's relationship is probably the closest look we've had at young Jedi crushing on each other. We've heard about like Eivor and Elzar and Stellan, but we haven't really seen someone going through it. And to get into Gavi's head, I thought was really fun. So how was it writing that? And how is writing a Jedi romantic relationship different from writing a normal one?
I think both of us, when I say that was the hardest part of the whole book, right?
Mm-hmm.
We rewrote the scene that kind of culminates their relationship and complexity and challenges many times. Like that was the one I think we struggled with the most, in a good way struggled with. We had the most conversations about with each other, with story group, but all really positive ones, you know, all in the name of like, how do we really get this right? Like, what are we trying to do with it? What's the point of it? You know, how do we honor it? How do we not just kind of blow it off? How do we not overplay it? That was the most challenging thing, but it was a great challenge.
It was. I think we rewrote that scene at least 10 times.
That's one of the ones that put to the point that I have no idea who wrote what.
Yeah, no, that was, I was reading that again. And I was like, I don't remember what it's all, you know, that one feels like a very, very much like us scene, you know? I think that, you know, it's complicated. It's complicated. But it was really important to us that we never give the message that it wasn't okay to have those feelings, right. Even though they're Jedi, you know. I'm just like, it was really important for us to be able to be like, this is like a real thing. This is a true thing. And in some ways, I feel like Gavi is trying to decide between multiple loves of his life, and one of his constant forever love is the Force. So and it is kind of like a, you know, why can't I have it all? But I think they're really sweet. I love them, and we really wanted to be able to write about, like, you know, young queer love. And that's not necessarily something that we've seen a ton of, like among Jedi. So yeah.
And I remember for me, like, I don't think I would have been, I definitely wouldn't have been able to write the scene from scratch, you know? So it was so much like, cause Alyssa definitely wrote the first draft of that scene that then, you know, transformed so many times. But I also remember very clearly like that draft and loving it, and also having visions of my own and ideas, and then kind of melding our visions. One thing for me that kind of clicked after many back and forths was the notion of the different kinds of love that we have for each other. And I love that Star Wars allows for that conversation to be so deep. But the notion of like two people loving each other face to face versus two people loving each other as they look out into the world side by side. Yeah. And how there is, you know, once you kind of have a more expansive understanding of love and even romance, like how that transforms this question of attachment, you know, and like, how do you care about someone, you know, that you're attached to, and how do you not be attached to them? And there is no, this is the answer, but there is a, like, this is us committing to that process and committing to the process also that we've, like, you know, given our lives to and doing that together, you know, instead of being like, we cannot even admit that this is real. We must run in the other directions, or like, we're going to throw it all away for each other. Like both of those have, in this particular situation, had their own forms of toxicity, you know, and danger. And we wanted to kind of like just let them kind of explore that without just cutting off every option at the root.
I think this book and Race to Crash Point Tower both did a great job of exploring the difference between like possessive attachment and connection, which I think can be misconstrued in Star Wars a lot. But I thought I would have never guessed that took 10 drafts. It read good. Very clearly and very well.
Yes. Yeah, I think we spent a lot of time talking about attachment and what it means. And I think for me, like, attachment and non-attachment is like, for me, non-attachment is being able to love freely and fully and understand your feelings rather than shut it out. And also to be able to, you know, to let it go if you need to, like, I don't know. It's very sweet. And for me, like, non-attachment isn't just closing that door.
Right.
It is looking at it and being like, I know what you are, and I accept this. So, yeah.
Great. I think another aspect of the Jedi that I really liked seeing in this book was them as part of the community on Valo, especially in flashbacks. But, you know, in the prequels, we mostly see the Jedi centralized on Coruscant, not really out in part of the galaxy. But in this one, Gavi's waving to neighbors. His best friend is a non-Jedi that he goes and visits, and he's called, like, Drigget's mother calls him her Jedi son. Stuff like that was just really fun and interesting to see. So how was it exploring that side of the Jedi?
That's something I also feel really strongly about. I think that in order to serve a community, you have to be part of that community. You have to understand what's going on, and you have to know the people, or else you're just rolling in and you're like, hey, I don't know what your situation is. I'm just going to drop all these, like, sanctions on you. Bye. And I'm not about that. I think that as we were talking about what it means to, like, write Jedi on Valo, who are, like, trying to save Valo, it seemed odd to not have, like, the people of Lanisa City in the story. And so we really wanted to push that forward and be able to, like, be able to feel that and be able to know them the way that we want to know these Jedi kids.
Totally that. And then I think on top of that, there's so many interesting conversations about staying and leaving that these characters are having with themselves and with each other, you know, throughout. It's funny. I was reflecting on how hilarious it is in a way that the name is of the book is Escape from Valo. And the ultimate arc of one of our most important characters is to not escape from Valo, you know, and like how important that is that, you know, he really gets to this place where he's like, this is my home and my move right now is to stay. And, you know, not that there's a right or wrong answer, you know, each of them really has to find their path. But I love that we just have this opportunity to have both Jedi and non-Jedi, all of who consider Valo home, to deal with the really difficult and impossible choice of like, what do you do when you're under siege? And, you know, the place that you call home is no longer safe for you. And that there's just a lot of choices and they're all wrong and they're all right at the same time. And it's unfair, you know, and everyone suffers for it, but they also, you know, find their form of home no matter what.
Speaking of potentially wrong choices, Drigget's trajectory completely surprised me.
Oh, good.
I couldn't think of a really thought-provoking question for this, so I'll just ask why? Why would you do that? Like, I was like, for sure she's going to come back and help the kids, but nope.
That's a great question. I hadn't even thought of that. I guess I knew from the beginning that she wouldn't, so maybe that. But you're right, it kind of looks that way, and then, nah. Alyssa,
answer yeah. Three. Oh, my girl? My favorite? My baby girl? Yeah, I mean, speaking of attachment and non-attachment, I think there's that bit at the end where Drigget is using like the Jedi techniques of being like, I'm going to focus on this thing and I'm going to hold it and I'm going to let it go. But that's like a really toxic form of like practicing non-attachment. She's like, I'm just going to throw away everything that I've ever cared about so I can get this done. And that is dangerous. I think that for me, Drigget is a character who kind of represents the kids who are stuck in really awful situations and there is no good way out. And so I really wanted to make sure she was sympathetic and that you can tell that she's trying to find a way to do the right thing in her own way. And that the pressure is just of trying to hold everyone together is just crushing her. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, she makes a choice at the end. It's a really, really gnarly choice. And I think that we'll see where that takes her going forward.
I love that arc so much, too. And I think throughout the book, you see a lot of conversations about attachment also happening in the non-Jedi characters. And with Drigget particularly, there's a way that she's letting go, but it's rooted in holding on at the same time, too. Like, she's holding on so tight. And her kind of final moment compared to Gavi's, they're so close together because they're best friends. And they're also, like, polarities apart. You know, Gavi really finds this place where he's, like, this is what letting go means, and this is how I can let it make me better, you know, in so many ways. And Drigget is like, not, you know, and then Niv Drendow is like, I'm so attached to my dogs that I will murder everyone who gets near my dogs. And that's his arc. You know what I mean? And like, that's attachment. Like, Nerdrendo is the epicenter of attachment embodied in one obnoxious teenager. And there he is.
I don't know how you did it, but you did it again. Next question is about Nivdrendow. Do you think in another life he and Tep-Tep would get along? Because they both seem to love monstrous animals.
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Besties.
I think they would be good friends. I think they'd be monster besties. You know, and Tep-Tep's just a little ray of sunshine. I think she would just, you know, so bright. And she loves animals so much. I think they get along.
Absolutely.
she'd win him over.
Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting to see someone so attached and loving with the Nameless. That was a fun introduction. I look forward to seeing where Nivdrendow and Drigget go in the High Republic adventures.
We have not seen the last of either of them. And Nivdrendow, both of them really, but they've taken such a life of their own since writing this book. And I don't think either of us set out to write them as like characters that we were necessarily going to follow throughout the rest of phase three, but they have popped up already in so many other things that I'm like trying to keep track of them is wild as they go in their different directions and similar directions and everything else. So that's been one of the true pleasures of this, is like just coming up with all these new characters, you know, with Alyssa, and then seeing them grow and passing them on to other writers and everything else. So there's a lot ahead in store for our little friends and enemies.
Oh yeah, no, 100%.
How has writing the Nile characters changed now that they've had some serious victories against the Republic and the Jedi? Or are they kind of the same in your mind?
I think they're struggling with what it means to win and then lead, you know? And like, it's like that Hamilton line, whatever it is, you know, winning is one thing, whatever. And that's, you know, they're in this weird situation that we see dramatized across the initiative of like, you know, now we have territory. Now we've done the thing that we no one thought was possible. And it almost is like, did they even know? I don't think they expected to kind of like get where they got. And now they're stuck with it and they have to deal with it. You know, and there's bureaucracy and management and, you know, all kinds of issues that come with it. And they don't know, you know, how to manage. On top of that, they don't have like that great a central kind of like organizing principle. And that's fun in games when you're just a bunch of Vikings like murdering people for fun, but that's different when now you have to like manage economies and like, you know, run an occupation. And what we see here is the Nile as an occupying force, you know, being as chaotic and anarchistic, but also really oppressive as they, you know, want to be. And, you know, so I think it's fun in a way and interesting and also really challenging to see, you know, how our young people fight that and use the negligence of the Nile, you know, against them.
You actually just reminded me of someone in our book club talked about the Nile and Markion as if they were the Joker from The Dark Knight, where he says, "I'm just a dog chasing cars. If I ever caught one, I don't know what I would do with it." That kind of feels like the Nile right now.
Totally. And that's an interesting place for, I think, bad guys to be in, because while they have just won and they're at their moment of triumph, they're also totally out of their comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Vark Tarpalin being like, "I used to be a rock star and now I'm an administrator. What am I supposed to do with this?"
Exactly. He's so useless and mad about being useless, but he's like, "This is my life now."
The connections to The Rising Storm and Race to Crash Point Tower and Midnight Horizon were all great. I'm curious how the mission to reclaim the Innovator specifically came about.
I feel like that might have been handed down from on high, actually. I think it was. Yeah. I think that was always just part of the book. Like might have even been someone totally else on the team at one point was like, "We should bring the Innovator back," or something. It might have been Mike. It was probably Mike. Mike is a brilliant story person, and he's mm-hmm. often behind some of the coolest ideas in the High Republic. I don't think either of us thought of it, but I know we were both like, "Yeah!" As soon as like, "Oh, it's an underwater like rescue operation to like pull this ship out." And then I love, to your point, I just love that tie-in aspect of it being like, here's a thing that happened. You don't have to read The Rising Storm to know that a ship was down during a battle. You know, there was a battle. We talked plenty about the battle of, you know, in that book, but you don't have to read any of it. It's just this idea that there's this underwater ship that's really symbolic and representative of the Republic and its triumph and its tragedy. And mm-hmm. so it's almost like, of course, you got to bring that back. And then you got to, you know, get the stuff that's on it.
Yeah, I was just excited to write the Eviscerator. I thought that's a sick ship. It's so fun.
Yeah, yeah.
I love how much Ram loves it, too.
That was, I think, my favorite scene to write is when Ram just is in his element. You know, and he's already flown it once, and that was in a very desperate and urgent situation over the skies of Corellia, you know, and he was figuring it out still, but now he's done it before. So when he gets into it again, I did a run on that first, and then as we were kind of coming up on the closing, you know, finishing up stuff, I was like, let me take one more stab at this scene. And yeah. I really just like got to go in on it, and I had so much fun.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful scene. I love that one.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not expecting much of an answer from this next question, but Mike Ciclane's not here. He can't say anything. So what's next for each of you in the High Republic?
Let's see. Can you talk about what you're doing?
I don't think I can. Mike's going to parachute in and be like, no.
We don't know when anything's being announced, so that makes it tricky.
Yeah, but...
there's more ahead.
Yeah, we're both working on some fun stuff. And I'm very excited for your stuff. I'm also very excited for my stuff.
What I can tell you is that in the current arc of adventures where we're at right now, we're still trying to figure out where everybody is or if everybody is. And there's what we already know is that there is this big prison ship assault. That's about to happen. And we know that Niv Drendow is part of that moment, as is Drigget. And so we're bringing in a lot of the threads from Escape from Valor that are starting to culminate once again. As you might have noticed, that very, very end of Escape from Valor kind of leads us into that moment to some degree with them, Niv Drendow and Drigget planning their next moves. So it's all very, very connected. I can't wait for people to see it. The art is incredible. I've been sending a lot of the art to Alyssa as it's coming in from Elisa Romboli, who's incredible. It's just been so cool to see these characters that we wrote now come to life on the page in visual form, including, no, I can't say that. But yeah, so much ahead. You'll see. Dunk, 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 dunk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And Daniel and I talk about story stuff like every day. So, what we make is definitely going to be a little bit like this, even when it's, you know, our own stuff.
I almost feel like what's ahead is like Escape from Valor plus, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. It's its own thing by all means. Absolutely. And I'll say this again, and I'll die on this hill. You don't have to read a lot. Most of the stuff, you don't have to read the stuff that comes before it. Mm-hmm. It's just better if you do, but if you don't, that's fine. But like, if you've read Escape from Valor, so much of what's ahead is going to feel like bonus material on top of that, which it sounds like it's just bonus material. It's its own thing, but it's connected in really cool ways that you're gonna enjoy.
It really is. It's really cool.
If you haven't, you're still gonna, like, you know, there's no way you're gonna read Niv Drendow and not immediately love and want to kill him.
So we actually fell in love with Niv Drendow. Like, we're like, look at this guy, look at this loser. And then suddenly, like, the more we wrote him, the more we were like, oh, this is great. I love this guy.
He just keeps losing no matter what he does. He does. It's very charming and horrible in its own way.
I love it.
Well, that was way more than I was expecting to get from that answer. You danced around specifics, but you sufficiently teased everything. I'm very excited. Escape from Valo is out right now. I think by the time this comes out, Dr. Aphra has also ended, so you can check out the final issue. The High Republic Adventures Phase 3 is ongoing. All of that's out now, so go read it. But for now, where can people find you online, and what other stories would you recommend for Star Wars fans?
DJ Older on Twitter, Daniel Jose One on Instagram, Daniel Jose Older on Substack. DanielJoseOlder.net is my website where all of this stuff can be found, including classes on writing that I teach and all my different books. So go there and find everything I've written and buy it.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Crash Wong. My website is CrashWong.net. And if you like Drigget Parse, read The Fisher Queen, which is a short story. It was my very first published short story. And it was nominated for like, everything.
Here we go.
But yeah, that one's about the dark side of the mermaid fishing industry on the Mekong River. So yeah, go find it, go read it. It's fun, I guess.
Well, great. Thank you both for taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. And thank you all for watching, and may the force be with you.